Thursday, September the 29th, I woke up about 8:30 feeling completely alive. I'd had enough sleep. What a marvelous venison it is. While Lennon and I were having breakfast, we made plans to go to Camp David. I reminded him of the wedding on Saturday of the Wirtz's son, and right afterward we would take with us to Camp David the Dean Rusk and the Katzenbachs, the McNamaras and the Cy Vances, the two brothers Rostow and their wives, and the Foy Kohlers. It was a good day of work, and I felt like doing it. Work in the White House often means meeting people, handling papers and dictating, desk work, and talking on the phone. There was a lot of each. In the morning, a long talk with Linda Byrd in New York. She's having a gay time of theaters and good dining spots and parties and bright people, and she's shopping. What a metamorphosis from the Linda Byrd of a couple of years ago. And I talked to Horace Busby, as Lyndon would say, to build a fire under him and get him started on writing the scenario around which the exhibits man would have to build the exhibits that tell the story of Lyndon's 30-odd years in political life. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Dr. Ransom to report that Dr. Grover and Mary Lasker had both agreed to be on the acquisitions committee, and would he please get in touch with them and settle on a date agreeable to the three of them. Then we could decide whether we needed additional members. I gave him two dates in October that would suit me, and from here on he'll carry the ball. And I talked to Bill Walton about the work being done on New York Avenue, beautiful specimens of crepe myrtle in a double alley down the median strip, and some brick curbing or small narrow walks. It's very handsome, and sometimes there's holly in the middle. Several blocks of it start with a great blessing of spreading elm trees. It's going to be a handsome addition to Washington. And I talked to Mr. Williams about the grounds, and then Mrs. Mellon called me. I was delighted that she did. It was about time to plan the flowers for next spring. Did I want any changes? What had worked out well? I told her the gloriosa daisies had been indeed glorious, and the geraniums unhappily not so good, and the silver plaque on the arbor, Mrs. Kennedy's garden, had not come back, and the grapevine was a blazing success, loaded with Concord grapes, which I had served to guests on their breakfast tray, nestled in a bed of the grapevine leaves, and also had tea out there many times in the summer, and watched them hanging in green clusters and later purple. This seemed to please her so much, and I was glad because I want very much to keep her continued interest. And we talked of Lafayette Square. The plans proposed have not been accepted by the Fine Art Commission, which amazed me. I never thought that anything she approved would not be approved by the Fine Arts Commission. Yes, she would be glad to see the plans for the President's Park as it extends down toward the Corcoran and the Pan-American and Constitution Avenue, the new planting and fountains and walks that are being made possible by the wonderful gift of $75,000 from Mrs. Rose Zales, whose grandfather was the first head of the parks in the District of Columbia 100 years ago. The morning was broken by a visit from Diana, who wanted to tell me about her new job. She's resigned from the Peace Corps and is going to work full-time for the Girl Scouts, but really is a sort of an executive to handle the conservation program that was launched by the 10 or 11 service organizations, the youth ones, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, 4-H, Future Farmers, YWCA, YMCA, and so forth, at our youth conference last June. The purpose is to keep up the interest and the impact made by the conference, and to make youth more aware of their stake and their obligations in conservation. She'll do it well. She's intelligent and aggressive enough, and a salesman. And then, one of the meetings of the day, I went over to Lyndon's office to meet the 6 outstanding 4-H club members that had come to make a national report to him. Fine, intelligent, good-looking young people they were, ranging from Georgia to New York to Virginia to California. I talked with them a while. The most interesting bit I got is that now only 45% of the 4-H youngsters come from farm homes, the rest from rural non-farm areas and small towns, and 6% of them come from cities of more than 50,000 population, so it's really moving into the cities. Then back over to the mansion, to my desk again, and close to 1, because Lyndon was a little late, into the yellow room to greet his luncheon guests, a group of governors, Moore of North Carolina and Brannigan of Indiana, and Reed of Maine, we had a nice talk about our trip on the great big ship, and Romney of Michigan, looking quite handsome but not too at ease, and Rovog of Minnesota and Love of Colorado, and handsome young Governor Guy of North Dakota, and Rampton of Utah. I told him I still had some of the suntan left from standing on top of the Glen Canyon Dam at that wonderful dedication meeting, looking out on the blue waters of Lake Powell, and Governor Bellman of Oklahoma, and here it was I who felt a little embarrassed, because we had laughed a bit about his telegram, which uninvited us to Oklahoma, and Governor Camel of New Mexico. And to him I was all praise of the glorious splash of golden aspens on the mountain, and the soft gold of the chamisa, coupled with the purple asters that grow so abundantly by the highway. I asked him for the name of the director of the New Mexico Highway Department, so I could write him a letter expressing my delight in them, and also ask if they had a program in New Mexico, like we do in Texas, of harvesting wildflower seeds and tossing them out on barren stretches. No, they didn't. He seemed very pleased and mildly surprised that I had noticed them so much. Really, they were a glory. Then, back to my room for a light lunch, signing a high stack of mail, thank yous to California and New Mexico. Marsha Maddox is a most prolific letter writer, and she takes care of her people. Work with Liz and hours of recording, broken by another visit with other people. Lyndon called me. He had Dr. Barnaby Keeney out in the West Hall, and Roger Stevens and Doug Cater. They were over to report on the government's work on the first anniversary of the National Foundations on the Arts and Humanities. They gave us a list of the grants they had made, and Roger Stevens said he was pleased to be able to report to the president that more has been done for the arts in this administration than in literally all others put together. After Lyndon and the children, and this house, and conservation beautification, and the Lyndon Johnson Library, arts are one of my close interests, so I was delighted to hear this. Next, I went bowling alone. A couple of pretty good games, not quite topping my score of yesterday, which was 157 on the best one. And then some more desk work, until it was time to put on a long brocade evening dress, sit down with Lyndon for a small bite, and go out at 9:30 to the Statler Hotel for the Brookings Institute speech. It's 50th anniversary. Lyndon made an extraordinarily good speech, although I could tell his throat was bothering him. Then we went upstairs for a little reception with the head members of Brookings. Yeah. Rather to my surprise, I'd found it a delightful half hour. I met one member who had just floated 43 miles down the Colorado River and said he wished it were 400, and was completely in tune with all the things I had done on rivers, and another member who had actually heard me make my little speech at the Museum of Modern Art. It always amazes me to find somebody who knows about anything like that. And another who had been present at the launching of Mrs. David Rockefeller's Flower Encyclopedia. Mm-hmm. And she and I talked wildflowers and how to spread their use up and down the rights-of-way of highways all over the country. And then there was Dr. Carmichael, who had read the script of The Living White House and thought it was a great addition to the White House volumes. I found myself very much in tune with them. Then we left. Lyndon was tired. It had been a rough day. All days are rough now. Back at the White House just at time for the news, I faithfully did my exercises and then had a rub and then went in to read myself to sleep as Lyndon labored away on his night reading. Days like this are the sort that earn me the time to go out usefully on trips such as the California, Arizona, New Mexico one. Days of playing the role of being the First Lady, of working in the White House with family and desk and people.